Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.
Another world, another time, in the age of wonder.
There was once a dream. You could only whisper it. Anything more than a whisper, and it would vanish.
A battle between good and evil.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
Where shall I find a new adversary so close to my own level?
Try the local sewer.
You know of the rebellion against the Empire?
The Avengers, Earth's mightiest heroes.
Peace means having a bigger stick than the other guy.
One of these days, I'm gonna have a stick of my own.
I'm Groot.
Welcome to the Neverland Podcast. The podcast for lovers of Disney, Pixar, Marvel, and Star Wars.
I'm glad you're here to tell us these things.
Please welcome your host, Jeremy.
I thought he'd be taller.
Yeah, I can fly.
All it takes is faith. Trust.
Well, if it isn't the Star-Spangled Man with a plan, what is your plan today?
Up to Neverland!
Take your pixie out of your pockets, Neverlanders. Sprinkle some of that pixie dust around. Think of that happiest thought and let's fly away to Neverland. I will, of course, be your guide. I'm the head lost boy of Neverland. I am the Spider Pan, Jeremy. And how did I get to be known as the Spider Pan? Well, because every lost boy has to have a nickname. And you can choose a nickname for yourself by heading over to NeverlandPodcast.com. You also might notice that there aren't any lost girls. That's because girls are too clever. They don't get lost. But we do have pixies, and pixies get to choose a nickname for themselves as well. You just fill out a little form there on the website, and you pick out a nickname, and we'll announce it on the show, and we'll add you to the website. It's just something we do for fun. I'm not going to start spamming you or anything, so don't worry about any of that. But you can support us on Patreon if you like. If you go to Patreon and look up Neverland Podcast, you'll find us. Patreon listeners don't have to hear ads in the middle of the show, and it does help me to keep making this show. We also do have a shop you can find on the website. You can find t-shirts. I have actually noticed there's some new popularity in the Unicorn Pea shirt, which if you don't understand that one, golly, how long ago was it that Eric was at Animal Kingdom and stayed in a parking lot called Unicorn Pea, and we thought it was funny. We made a shirt based off of it. Apparently the shirt is pretty funny to some people, which is good because that's what our intention was. We wanted you to have a laugh and wanted to wear it. It only comes in yellow, okay? So, but this has been kind of an eventful week. This is a year for a lot of 30th anniversaries. This is the 30th anniversary of Disney's Hollywood Studios, also known as the Disney MGM Studios theme park. That has opened up 30 years ago. They had a little celebration going on down there. This is also 30 years of the 1989 Tim Burton-directed Batman, and Fathom Events hosted a showing over the weekend on Free Comic Book Day, May the 4th, which, of course, yes, May the 4th be with you. That was Star Wars Day and Free Comic Book Day, so that kept me very, very busy. And I did get out to go see Batman, and it's fun to see it on a big screen again. I haven't seen it on a big screen in 30 years. And you get to, with a larger screen, you get to see a little bit more of the actor's performances, and you can see the conflicted Bruce Wayne as he's, you know, stepping into the life of a vow he made to his parents, and he's becoming Batman, and he's avenging them for the rest of his life. And now he's got this conflict that he meets this girl, and when, you know, when he first, you know, has a date with Vicki Vale, and he's just basically keeping up a billionaire playboy lifestyle, and he keeps her distant from him at that dining room table. But you see him start to kind of like her, and then you have the scene where they're kind of in bed and he's lying there awake. You see a lot of things go through his face, and he's kind of like, what did I just do? I mean, I kind of like her, but I can't get involved with people, not with what I'm doing. And you see there's moments of that conflict in his eyes when it comes to with her, and even some conflict in her eyes at the end of the movie before Alfred appears to escort her away at the end of the film, where she's like, what have I gotten myself into? Because he's always going to choose being Batman really over being with me. And that's something he kind of states to her. You know, like, well, I'd like to make this work, but he's out there right now and I got to go to work. He's making his choice. No, There's no one else that can do this and be Batman but me. You know, that kind of thing. You know, he'd spent his entire life becoming Batman. So that's definitely the direction his life was going, and he just doesn't know where to place her, but he likes her, you know. So it's a lot of that same conflict you see in Mask of the Phantasm, which I absolutely love that animated Batman movie. But it was great to watch this on a big screen, and I even noticed something weird that I had never paid attention to, but Vicki Vale in her apartment on the fireplace keeps a popcorn bowl. There's a bowl of popcorn. And you kind of see it there, and you wonder, well, why is it there? Why is it on the fireplace? But it makes for a convenient thing when the Joker's over there and he smashes the Alicia's mask in front of her. She grabs a bowl of popcorn there like it's going to protect her from the Joker. But the weird thing is when Bruce Wayne comes back out and he's kind of grabbing that poker from the fireplace, you kind of see Vicki Vale's hand in the popcorn like she was thinking about eating some of it, like she's just watching how this is going to play out. But I think part of the reason also to have that popcorn bowl is it just makes a, you know, when one of the thugs makes a grab on her after Bruce has been shot, and the popcorn kind of goes flying up into the air. And so it just makes a good visual, I suppose. But I just realized that's kind of weird that she's keeping a popcorn bowl up on the mantle of the fireplace. Okay. You know, so you just go with it. So, free comic book day, though, I consider it a big success. I got to grab a lot of free stuff that I haven't read. Also, I got to grab a few things that I'd missed out on. I'm almost completed a run of Superman that I've been grabbing. I'm missing, I think, issue 4 of the current run of Superman. And so I'm close to getting to actually sit and read through all of it to catch up where Jor-El is back and all that kind of thing. So I was doing that. I was grabbing some more issues of Amazing Spider-Man in this Hunted storyline that they have going on. So I was able to pick up a few things. I've also now, you know, have you seen the 90th anniversary of Mickey Mouse Funko Pops? They had a Mickey Mouse for some of the greatest Mickey Mouse cartoons. And I had already selected some Mickey Mouses from some of my favorites. Well, Pixie Heather went into a Joanne store looking for stuff. She wants to do some things with some of our pillows, and she saw that they had some Funko Pop Mickey Mouses and a bunch of other characters as well, but they were on sale, and so I go with her over back to Joanne's, and I buy 3 more Mickey Mouse ones, and then I realize I'm only missing a couple. While I was out on Free Comic Book Day, I've completed my set, because I've got a Mickey that comes with Minnie from a Valentine's Day to a Toys R Us exclusive. I've got a just Disney Mickey Mouse, and he's numbered number 1. I've got that one, and I found Kingdom Hearts versions of a Kingdom Hearts version of Mickey Mouse, and then I've got, of course, all the 90 years of Mickey collected now. So I have this bunch of Mickey Mouse Funko Pops, and I've run out of shelf space to place them all in my home. So they're all kind of standing on top of each other in this long tower on a shelf right next to my bed, and my wife's just like, that's going to just fall on your head one of these days. You're going to bump the wall or something. So I need to get a shelf. So I don't know where I'm going to put another shelf, but I need to get a shelf to put all my Mickey Mouse Funko Pops. But it's kind of fun to have them all. It's very funny having this tower of them. So overall, I had a pretty good time with Free Comic Book Day. You know, getting to see Batman again. Of course, I've seen it so many times, but, you know, getting to see it on a big screen again was just a lot of fun. Another big thing, though, I guess that we want to, you know, talk about the Chewbacca or the Wookiee in the room is the passing of Peter Mayhew that happened this week. And, you know, there's been a lot of very nice things said about him, and that's nice. I appreciate that. Unfortunately, my memories of Peter Mayhew were tainted at a Planet Comic-Con here in Kansas City. Let me tell you this story, and this is how unfortunate it can be sometimes when we meet celebrities, you know, because I love Chewbacca, and so this was an exciting thing. But I went over, he was not in Celebrity Row on Planet Comic-Con, so he's out on the floor where you actually can get, you know, to him a little easier. And I asked his publicist or whoever, whose handler, is it okay? I do a Disney podcast. We talk a lot of Star Wars. Would I be able to interview him? And she said no. I said, well, that's okay. I still want to go through his line. And there wasn't a line, really, at the time. I still would like to go and meet him. I didn't have any money to buy any autographs or anything like that. I just kind of looked at, you know, stuff, said, well, this is really neat. And I went and I shook his hand and said, thank you so much for being Chewbacca. I really do love Chewbacca, and thank you for all that. You've meant a lot to me in my childhood. And I'm saying all these nice things and shaking his hand. And he won't even make eye contact with me. He had this very dismissive look on his face as he just kind of turns away like, yeah, okay, fine, whatever, shake my hand. and he just sent me off on my way. Now, I noticed, though, people who paid money to take pictures with him, he's all smiles. But since I wasn't offering up any money, I got dismissed. And that's very unfortunate that sometimes that happens. But I've tried to excuse it, like, well, maybe he wasn't feeling well that day, because I know he'd had all kinds of arthritis in his legs and stuff, so he might not have been in a very great mood. Whatever the reason, that has tainted my view of Peter Mayhew. That's the interaction I got with him. And heck, I was even talking to Brian of The Real Brian Show last night. We were playing some Blade and Soul, great free MMO, by the way. And we were talking about this, and he mentioned he got to meet the actress who played Uhura on Star Trek. And he's a big Star Trek fan, and he was very excited, but he wasn't there to buy anything. And she kind of motioned him towards the autographed pictures, and then crossed her arms and leaned away from him. And didn't look at him, you know, like, you know, I'm here to sign autographs, not to shake hands and just meet people. And I know it's very possible for a celebrity to just be like, you know, hey, it's great to talk to you. Rob Paulson did that for me. I got a chance to just talk to him. I said, I don't have any money to buy any signed things, and I can't interview, but I appreciate talking to him. We talked about the new Ninja Turtles series and stuff, and I shared his thoughts on it. And I mean, there's no reason that if you become some level of famous that you can't have good reactions with, you know, good encounters with everybody, especially at a convention. You know, even if they're not spending any money on you, just, hey, you know, appreciate that person. Enjoys your work. They like you for your work, you know, and you just don't just dismiss them because you're not getting anything from them other than, you know, they just want like a little bit of your time and just to be able to talk to you and shake your hand and thank you for what you've meant to them. So I hope that if I ever achieve some level of fame, and you know, who knows, with my work in radio, and maybe there's a little potential for some voice work for me, I'm kind of working my way around on that. But, you know, if I get some level where I'm at a convention and I'm some sort of famous-ish to, or it's important to somebody to meet me, I want to make sure that I, you know, I acknowledge that person and thank them for their time and thank them to come and say hello. And I'm glad that I get to do that when I host a panel and I have people, you know, when I offer to sign our notes on the research that I did for the last panel, that people actually wanted it. I love that. And I hope I never lose that. If I become some huge big deal for some reason, and you know somebody wants to come up and be able to say hello and shake my hand, I don't want to just blow them off. You know, if I have to be in a hurry and to go somewhere, I would want to be the one of those people that be like, hey, walk with me if you can. I got to be over somewhere, but hey, walk with me. You know, I want to be that type of person, like Margaret Carey was. Margaret Carey was so sweet to me. I got to interview her, and she even remembered me after her panel and said hello and came over to me and talked to me some more. You know, that's the impression that I want to leave with people if I ever achieve that. I'm probably not going to get, like, a big name. That's who knows? Maybe I will be as far as podcasting goes. To you, I may be a big name. I don't know. But if I ever get to meet you and if I don't treat you the right way and show some interest in the fact that you came up to be able to talk to me because you appreciate this show and what I do, I will have failed you. Let me just say that now, and I will apologize if I ever fail anybody. So far, I don't think I have. Maybe somebody thinks I have. Of course, if I've failed somebody by now, they probably already quit listening to me. But, you know, that's unfortunately the memory that's going to stick with me of Peter Mayhew. But I'm still going to love him as Chewbacca, and I still love him for what he has done. But I just wish my meeting with him could have been better. Now, I do have some regular content that I want to get to today. We do have a trailer for Sonic the Hedgehog, which I'm going to go ahead and share the audio and discuss my thoughts of it. And then we have a great author, Steven Silverman. And I think he mentions how many books he's written. He's written a lot of books. I mean, he's written for magazines, newspapers. He was there at Shanghai Disney when it opened. But he's got a new book that's coming out on the 7th, Tuesday of this week, The Amusement Park. And it's got a long extra title that we'll talk about. And I'll make sure I get some links to be able to post it up there so you can pre-order it or order it on various websites that he wasn't sure he was allowed to mention, but I think we can mention where to find it. But I can at least put a link up for you on the website if you go to the show notes. I'm very interested in this book because I always learn stuff when I have these authors on. I have a great time talking to these different authors because they do all this research, they learn all these things, and they come on and they share a little bit of what they learned, and then the promise of all kinds of new information that could be really exciting to read about if you're interested in such a thing. And I suspect if you're a Disney fan, you have an interest in amusement and theme parks. So I think you're going to like this book. We talk a little bit about Walt and how he did things, and It's a great conversation, and that's coming up. But first, let's go ahead and take a visit to the trailer park.
Energy surge knocked out power across the entire Pacific Northwest. This needs someone who can figure out exactly what we're dealing with.
You're not suggesting who I think you're suggesting.
We have no choice.
What the?
Are you in charge here?
Yes, I am.
Nope!
Wrong.
I'm in charge.
Allow me to clarify. In a sequentially ranked hierarchy based on level of critical importance, the disparity between us is too vast to quantify. Agent Stone?
The doctor thinks you're basic.
Listen, pal, I don't know if you realize
I'm sorry, Major. What was your name?
Benny?
Nobody cares! SFPD!
Meow? Ah! Come on.
Okay, pal, I want answers.
Basically, it looks like I'm gonna have to save your planet.
No, but thank you for asking.
Uh-oh.
Whatever this creature is, our job is to secure it, neutralize it, see what makes it tick.
Look at this! I took 9 million steps today.
Stay in there and be quiet.
How much longer? I can't breathe in here.
Do you have your child in that bag?
No. I mean, yes, it's a child, but it's not Maya.
It's not your child.
It smells like body spray in an old ham sandwich.
Now, this trailer and the look of Sonic has gotten a lot of flack. I have seen where people have, you know, the internet redesigned Sonic. And what they've done with Sonic is, instead of two eyes, they basically gave him one eye with two pupils. If you think about this, because the way he looks on, you know, in games and in a cartoon, you know, he's got that typical cartoon where you've got this brow that kind of bends down and almost an angry look. But the two whites of his eyes are joined together almost as one eye. You really can't do that in a movie. It would not look right. It, because what, do they have just one giant eye that takes up his entire head? You know, so of course they had to separate his eyes and make him a little smaller. They want this to be a little bit more realistic. So I wish people would get off of that, you know. Plus the fact that we're talking about a blue talking hedgehog that is like 3 foot tall and runs at supersonic speeds, for crying out loud. Realism is, you know, let's forget it, okay, you know, a little bit, but also suspend your disbelief a little bit, you know, to where it's got to look a certain way in a movie, but for crying out loud, it's a blue hedgehog, you know, get over it. I think this movie, it looks just kind of goofy and dumb enough to where it's going to be just mindless fun and therefore possibly worth watching just to have a good time and let go of all your crazy issues you might have that he doesn't look right or whatever. And just go and have fun with it. And I think you could enjoy this movie. I think I'm going to go just because, you know, it's going to be fun. It's sort of like that old Super Mario Brothers movie. It's not a great movie, but it's kind of stupid fun. And you can kind of have a little fun with it if you let yourself just go with it and just have some fun. Because, you know, it's not great, but it's fun. And I think this is what Sonic is going to be. It's probably not going to be this great, you know, wonderful movie. But you know what? You might just have some fun with it. So give it a chance. Go check it out. And if you just don't want to see it, then just don't see it. But quit complaining on the internet. Just don't go then. If you're not happy with what you're seeing, then just don't go. Go play the games and have fun with them. You know, that's okay. But, you know, that's all I really wanted to say about that movie. let's go ahead and jump into the interview where I'm going to be joined by our old buddy, Lost Boy Eric, which, you know, he'll be in and out a lot here over the next month. He's in the process of getting into a new home, and so he's going to be very busy. And so I'm going to, when I can get him on and he can be a part of the show, that's fine. And if when he can't, then we'll just let him take care of stuff. So once he gets his life all sorted out, then he'll be back as a regular. And I'm sure you all are missing him, but he'll be with us here in just a couple seconds as we start this interview. And I don't introduce Eric because I didn't know if I would have him on before, and you know, but you know Eric, but he'll be there. So anyways, enough of my blabbering. Let's just get on to a great interview.
To Disney and beyond.
All right, we have a special guest this week. We here in Neverland, we love to have authors on there because they know stuff, because they've done all kinds of research, and they learn a lot of different things, and they write books where we get to learn stuff, and then we have them on the show to talk about the books, and we learn even more stuff. So this is fun, and this is a book I just found out about like a week ago. Actually looking at, y'all remember we had Chris Lucas on, and his book is now released. It was a top 10 Disney.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he was mentioning this book that he had just gotten it and he was enjoying it. Although I guess the book hasn't officially released yet, but we have Steven Silverman on here with a book called Amusement Park, if I remember correctly.
The Amusement Park.
The Amusement Park.
900 years of thrills and spills and the dreamers and schemers who built them.
Wow.
I know it's a mouthful, but just call it The Amusement Park.
The Amusement Park.
And that's really nice of Chris Lucas. I had no idea. That's really, he's a nice guy. So thank you. That tickles me no end.
Yeah, we had fun
and
talking to him
to
about
tickled.
His book, too.
Yeah. So. Yeah, his is a very good book as well.
I haven't got a chance to read it yet. I need to get a copy of that one. Of course, it would just add on to the stack of other stuff. I'm slowly still working through the Wisdom of Walt books, even though we've had that author on like twice now. Dr. Barnes is awesome. And I'm halfway through Terry Whelan's book, but I'm having a hard time finding time to read everything.
No, I know. You have to say, well, take a long plane flight. That's when I get it done.
Me as well. Yeah.
I'm still learning to balance my time with that. You know, now that I'm no longer a student and I'm now got a work schedule, and so I'm still figuring life out. So. So
I've
when
got a
is
few
this
years on you and I'm still trying to figure life out. But talk about Neverland.
No kidding. So when does the book officially release?
1 week from today, May 7th.
May 7th. Okay, so 1 week from the day of the recording.
It is in the bookstores, but they're not even allowed to put it on the shelves yet. And what I'm not allowed to suggest one retailer over another, but there's a certain one that's named after a river in South America.
it's not denial.
They promised delivery on publication day.
Awesome.
So nobody's seen it. Just a few friends, and one just emailed me, and he really made my day. He said, "Stephen, you have brought low culture to its highest point." But it is about the amusement park, and there is a great deal of Disney in it. But to show you how comprehensive this really long book is, and there are illustrations on every page, Walt doesn't really show up until page 350.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. A lot went on before he showed up. And he really took the best from everything that had, you know, was a predecessor of Disneyland, which I grew up with because I'm originally from Los Angeles.
Yeah, that's something Walt was really good at. He would take a lot of things and little,
right.
You know, even animatronics came from finding a little bird thing and a little store. And he thought, oh, hey, this is neat. Give it to Imagineers. Take this apart. Right. See how it works.
No, but there's no doubt he refined it. I take nothing away from him. He's one of my most admired people.
Yep, definitely.
Well, certainly with a title like 900 Years, it sounds like this goes back quite a bit.
It goes back. It actually starts in 1122, although the first, people will argue that the Roman gladiators and the Colosseum, that was an amusement park. It really wasn't. That was more like a circus.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But an amusement park, a permanent place I'm saying, opened in 1133, August 24th, 1133. It was Bartholomew Fair, and it was in England. And it was the court jester of King Henry I, who convinced the king through, he basically lied to the king and made up all this stuff and said that St. Bartholomew had come to him and rescued him when this giant hawk had plucked him out of the dispensary on a religious retreat. Anyway, the king was very superstitious, believed everything the court jester said. So, you know, they said, we're going to have a festival, honor St. Bartholomew. And it was originally a trade fair, but it quickly evolved. It ran for 700 years every wow. year in August, except those years there was a plague. It had rides, very primitive rides. You know, you would be on a swing, and they would push you around in a circle. entertainment and food. And those basically are the ingredients that went into, still go into an amusement park.
So probably something similar to what you'd see like at a Renaissance fair, where they'd have a ride where they'd wind you up with ropes and then release it and let it spin you around until the rope ran out.
Right. Or until you broke your neck.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure safety devices weren't a thing quite yet.
No, no. Listen, into the last, our last century, they weren't a thing. No, and
ride at your own
rides
risk.
Evolved, and we got into the mechanical age, and the rides got sophisticated, and the customer more demanding. And the other thing that characterized the amusement park, is that it was a place that attracted everybody, nobility and peasants, and they mingled. And the servants were, you know, kept separate from the, you know, the lords and ladies, so they could have a good time too, and they wouldn't feel beholden. It was a place to sort of throw off the social constrictions of the day, and have and be amused. And that also took on very sexual connotations as well, and that happened in the hedges. And in dark places, and you know, after, and then even later, we, you know, we got into tunnels of love, and they certainly were.
And now we have grad night.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
My, how things evolve. Yes. So, you know, that makes me even think, is, you know, is there any particular, like, snack food that we can owe to amusement parks?
Oh, absolutely. Like, well, it's also, now, again, amusement parks are not world's fairs, but they often took things from world's fairs. Now, the 1893 Chicago World's Fair, its midway really brought, established the amusement park in America. Mm-hmm. Copenhagen already had Tivoli and Bakken. It had Bakken first. And there was the Prater in Vienna, which had a fun zone. And World's Fairs had fun zones, but the one in Chicago really got things going. And it brought us the Ferris wheel. But it also brought us Cracker Jack, Aunt Jemima's pancakes.
Wow.
Milton Hershey saw a chocolate-making process at the fair. He up until then, he had been making caramels, and he switched to chocolate and made his first million.
Oh, wow.
So, yes, and the ice cream cone came from the St. Louis World's Fair.
Woohoo!
There's some dispute as to where exactly the corn dog came from. cotton candy also came from the St. Louis World's Fair, believe it or not, invented by a dentist.
I guess he was making business for himself.
Yeah. I mean, you have to understand, what I did in the book I started People Magazine's website. I was at People Magazine for 20 years.
Wow.
So I learned that, you know, if you want to get the reader involved, you don't write about machines so much. You don't write about real estate deals, you know, to get the land for the amusement parks. You write about the personalities who created all these things.
Yeah.
And that's what this book is. It's a series of personality profiles. And a lot of these, mostly men, larger than life characters. They weren't always so honest, but they were creative.
Yeah.
And that's what the book is about. And Walt Disney being one of them. Certainly.
Yeah.
Perhaps the greatest.
Definitely. Definitely. So So what is like the wildest ride that somebody came up with? In your opinion, at least.
Oh, terrible thing. I mean, well, there was a loop-de-loop roller coaster that they had a hard time perfecting, and that really broke necks.
Ooh.
And people, if they didn't break, well, they'd break their neck, they'd fall out.
Oh, you know, my goodness.
The roller coasters, even when I was a kid, I'm older than you. That's all you need to know.
Well, Hits and Neverland, we are not grown ups here, so.
We had Pacific Ocean Park in Los Angeles, and the roller coaster, you just held on. If you know, and if you let go and you fell out, that was your tough luck.
Oh, wow. Ooh. See,
no, you know, it was, I would say starting in the 70s, the insurance companies said, wait a minute, and all these harnesses came in and whatnot. And, but listen, NBC News yesterday ran a story on the Jersey Shore. There's a roller coaster being tested out, and they've got test dummies in it, and the test dummies were flying out of the cars.
Oh, my.
So, you know, this still goes on.
Yeah. But at least now they do tests like that, so
yes.
We've made sure.
Yes, they say. Well, they did a test at the Chicago World's Fair, but unfortunately they did it with workers.
Ooh.
Because there was a roller coaster there, and that first ride didn't go so well.
Oh, wow. And that was before anybody was signing a waiver, I'm sure, to say, oh, hey, just in case.
No.
Do you have a will?
Right.
And boy, now things have changed, because I remember here in Kansas City in 1995, there was an accident on one of our roller coasters at Worlds of Fun, and it was just a mess. And I mean, that ride was shut down for a long time. And even here recently at a water park, I guess it's been a couple years now, we had what was supposed to be this world record water slide, and we had an accident that killed a child. And
I know. It's, we shut down.
Yeah, that's been shut down.
Yeah, it's no laughing matter. You know, we're making light, but it,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's stuff that could still go wrong.
Parks, at this point, those people would be dead anyway.
Yeah.
Sorry.
You know, it's amazing with how old some of these are. You know, I remember riding a Joseph Miller roller coaster growing up. And you know, that thing is just, it's amazing. It's still in operation today. And to think, you know, how, you know, no computers, just math. And, yes. Yes.
Yeah,
in,
I love those.
Lagoon Park in Utah. And yeah. And it's just absolutely amazing how, you know, this, I don't know, it's, I'm trying to remember, I think it's close to 100 years old now.
Wow.
Just how much it's still in action, how thrilling it still is. And even though you do have to hold on, you know, it's still...
I'm sure they have safety belts now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. But it's still amazing to see how far it's come.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Seat belts, shoulder harnesses.
Cyclone.
Oh.
The Coney Island Cycle is 1927, and it was smoothed out a couple years ago. It was because otherwise you needed to see a chiropractor as soon as you got off.
Yeah.
But it's still spectacular, and it's a landmark, so hopefully it's not going to go anywhere. And the Wonder Wheel in Coney Island turns 100 next year.
Wow.
Yeah. So, no, I mean, we're coming up on these things. And again, you know, the Coney Island, there was a fellow named George Tillieu. He was the Walt Disney behind it. His family had been there since the Civil War, but all they did was sort of rent towels and swimsuits so people could go swimming in the ocean, which was a brand new thing during the Civil War because people were still afraid there were monsters that would devour you. I mean, you know, we too were a superstitious country. And, you know, but these were old world fears, but that made their way into the new world. But Tillieu and his father wanted to expand in Coney Island, it turned into this resort, but they faced a political boss who was so corrupt that he drove them out of town until finally the law went after the guy, the political boss. And once he left, Tillyou started he had amusements all over the place, but it wasn't until this daredevil sea captain came in and put a park in Coney Island, Sea Lion Park, in the early 1890s that it was the first amusement park to wrap a fence around itself and charge admission to get in. And that's what got Coney Island going.
Wow.
And then Coney Island eventually became so successful, it had three separate mammoth amusement parks. It had essentially three Disneylands.
Wow.
Luna Park, Steeplechase Park, and Dreamland. And it was so successful, and Coney Island was the number one resort in the world. It was the Disney World of its time. That the rest of the country built amusement parks, and many of them, even though they were landlocked locations, called themselves Coney Island. They were built mostly by the trolley car companies, the railroad barons, who had the money and wanted passengers to ride their trams. You know, trolleys are mostly used for men to go to work.
Right.
And at the end of the workday, the railroad guys were still paying for electricity. So you know, let's get people riding them to the end of the line and on weekends. And that's where they built the amusement parks. And they were terrific. And again, like in Bartholomew Fair, everybody came, bosses, employees, every level of social strata. Until Henry Ford introduced the Model T, suddenly people were getting their thrills from a machine on their own, just driving. So that took us to sort of the roaring 20s. And to top the thrill of a Model T, that gave us the golden age of the roller coaster.
Because now we needed to go faster.
Right, and higher, and, you know, hairpin turns.
Which, even on, so in wood, though, that's
then,
jerky.
Then the Depression happened. These places fell into disrepair. Mm-hmm. They sort of limped along through World War II because military people on leave would bring their dates to their places. But by the late 40s, you really didn't want to go near an amusement park. They were not safe. They were not savory. They tended to be in urban areas, which were starting to decay. And then in 1955, Walt Disney said, I'm opening this amusement park. And everyone said, you're crazy. Why would you open such a filthy place? And he said, mine won't be. And that changed everything.
Yeah. And then everybody else with amusement parks suddenly decided, we need a theme.
Yeah. Well, there had been themes. There were Santa Claus lands, and there were some Wild West places. Those were the themes. But Disney really took it to a new level. And then, of course, corporations, Marriott tried getting into the amusement park because they all failed. None of them were, one, they weren't Walt Disney. Two, Walt Disney had a TV show. I'm the kid who grew up with it. Every Sunday night, Walt Disney said, I'm opening this park in Southern California. You've got to come see it.
With an hour-long commercial.
Right.
Yeah.
And the other companies, you know, their parks couldn't match Disneyland. Then became more sophisticated, and now, of course, there are corporate-owned amusement parks that do very well.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all over the world. I was in Dubai. I was in Shanghai. I was in – all this was research for the book.
That's fun research.
It was a good book to write.
Yeah, I have to say, one of the most surprising theme parks that I ever heard about – or amusement park, I guess, rather, the World of Sid and Marty Krofft in Atlanta inside a hotel.
I was there. I was there. I was the opening.
Oh, wow.
And I rode the elevator with Gilligan.
Bob Denver.
Bob Denver. The rides were really lame. First of all, I was too old. Yeah, it was 1970. I was in my 20s. It was, I didn't know H.F. Puffin stuff. So who was this to appeal to? It had like three rides, and it didn't last long at all. It was a sort of a shopping complex, hotel complex, office complex. It's now the CNN studios.
Oh, wow.
But I was there. I drank their champagne. I was a very young journalist in Los Angeles at the time, and they invited me, and I went to Atlanta.
Sure. It's like, hey, you want to go to an amusement park?
I was always destined to write this book. I hadn't thought of the world. I had it in the book. Unfortunately, the book ran long, and I had to trim it. And that's one of the things that fell to the editing floor.
Oh, well, that just means you have material for a second book later.
Well, I wanted to do this in two volumes, to be perfectly honest, but fortunately, common sense prevailed, and it's one lush. The publisher did a great job. They really did. I wish every author this experience. It's really been wonderful. So. Some books, this is my 13th book.
Wow.
And some have been easier than others. And this was hard work. I'm not taking away from that. But I had wonderful opportunities. I was the first journalist inside Shanghai Disneyland.
Oh, cool.
It was. And the Pirates of the Caribbean ride.
Oh, yeah.
Just the greatest ride in the world. Yes, Harry Potter, it's true.
Yeah, I think that's what we've seen the footage of. It's amazing.
Like you do with Harry Potter.
Right.
And you don't have to wear 3D glasses like you do with Harry
Potter. Yeah.
No, I'm not knocking Harry Potter. It's wonderful. But this is better.
Even if you don't understand what they're saying half the time, you just the visuals from what
matter.
I've seen the video.
It doesn't matter.
Yes,
you can figure it out.
Okay, I'll get my visa lined up.
Yeah,
never says the guy who works for American Airlines can fly over there.
The admission is the parks cheaper than Florida and California.
Really? Oh yeah.
Hmm.
And I could be wrong, but I think Tokyo. The Tokyo parks are also quite reasonable. Hong Kong might be the only one that's.
I was there. I was in Tokyo in September. Tokyo Disney Sea is probably the greatest amusement park in the world.
Mm. Yeah, and that's one I hadn't even heard of, except for like maybe about 10 years ago. I was like, oh, Tokyo has a Disney park. So
well, especially when you consider how. Oh, I was just going to say when you.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Tokyo Disneyland is like Disneyland. I mean, a couple of the rides are a little different. There's a wonderful Winnie the Pooh ride, and Splash Mountain is a bit more elaborate. But the second park, Tokyo Disney Sea, is unique and spectacular. And they're adding on to it. It's going to be even greater.
I can't
wait to go back.
Well, I was going to say, it's kind of amazing to see the difference between Tokyo Disney Sea in California Adventure, both of which were opened reasonably close to each other.
Yeah.
So well, what began
well,
your love of...
You must remember that the Japanese parks are not owned by Disney. They only
license.
Yeah, Oriental Land Company.
Yeah, so they were financed by very deep pockets.
But not what got Disney, you...
Not that Disney is lacking for money.
Right. what got you first interested in amusement parks?
I think it's the fact that I worked at, well, I grew up with Disneyland, and my first job was I sold ice cream when I was 18. It was my summer college job, right next to Sleeping Beauty's castle.
Oh, cool.
And I had written a book on the history of the Catskill Mountains and all the art and literature and the hospitality industry up there and the various gangsters who hid out there. And the publisher said, you know, what do you want to do next? And it was the publisher who had approached me on the Catskills. I said, this really isn't up my alley. I'm not a nature boy. I'm a city boy. I prefer London and Paris to trees. And so it turned out well, knock wood, the Catskills. And they said, you know, so what do you want to do? They talked about the Adirondacks. And I looked at them. I said, no, trees. No. And they said, well, you know, what do you like? And I looked at them and said, I've always liked Disneyland. So that's, I don't have an elaborate answer. That was it. I always liked them. But also, well, yeah, I'm a journalist. It's all I've ever done. I was the chief entertainment writer of the New York Post.
Wow.
And I've written for every magazine and newspaper, practically in the English speaking world. And I thought, you know, this really hasn't been done. There were some academic books on amusement parks. Well, they're dry. They're not fun. They're not amusing. And they're filled with statistics and theories. And, you know, where's the history? And the other extreme, you know, I don't want to take anything away from the efforts of other people, but, you know, they're like scrapbook memory books that non-professional writers have put together on various amusement parks. And they invariably begin, when I was 8 years old, my grandfather took me to such and such a park. Well, that's nice, but I don't consider that a history lesson.
Right.
I'm not interested in you as an 8-year old, or really your grandfather. I'm interested in the park and who built the park, and
yeah,
who went to the park, and who supported the park, and what killed the park, you know, and what was going on in the country at the time. And I took that to the publisher and said, this is what I'm going to do. And they said, fine.
Sounds like a good idea to me.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm actually still interested.
It wasn't as easy as all that, but let's just say it was.
I'm actually still interested to find out, like, in Kansas City, it's like I grew up, there was always Worlds of Fun there.
Mm-hmm.
But as I've gotten older, I've learned, and it's just down the road from where I live now. There's actually like a shopping center. That's like a Target and a grocery store there now. But there used to be an amusement park there where they had a kind of a fake lake, and it was based around the fact that you could play on the lake, and they had some roller coasters and rides. And like, this I don't know whatever happened to this park.
These places were built. You have to remember, again, put things into historical context. When these trolley parks were built, one, there were no cars, there were no movies. This was the entertainment people went to. They predated the movies. And it was a shared experience. You know, basically, the rides were made in Philadelphia or Coney Island and exported to these outposts throughout America. By 1910, there were 2,000 amusement parks in America.
Oh, wow.
And that was our entertainment. So, I'm not surprised that the Target used to be.
Used to be an amusement park, by the way.
Is the lake still there?
Well, there's a little pond on the other side of the street that's pretty fun for some fishing. You know, it's a little small, little bluegill. It's not worth keeping. But my wife and I, you know, we'll sit out there at the side of this pond. And we've one time, if you get in there in the evening, you know, we saw a young beaver come through. We saw bats actually come down and grabbing drinks of water and eating mosquitoes. I mean, you know, if you like, you know, you're not the nature boy, but
no,
but it's kind of a nice place to just sit and visit.
I would be inside Target.
Actually, here lately, so would I. I'd be saying, I've been promised you guys have Mickey bars in this Target, but I never see them.
Oh, yeah. I've noticed Walmart. Oh, I shouldn't mention free plugs these people. A certain large retailer is selling a lot of Disney merchandise.
Yeah. That's the only way I can get a hold of stuff anymore.
Yeah. You don't have to go. You don't have to go to the parks to have an amusement park experience at home.
But if you want to go to get a good amusement park experience, though, you probably should go to the parks.
I think I would rather be.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Even because you know, when I grew up, and it was used to be owned by Lamar Hunt at Worlds of Fun. That was the end all be all for me, having never gone to a Disney park. You know, Worlds of Fun, and it was based on Around the World in 80 Days. It had good theming. You would go to different areas. And the music would be a part of that country and stuff like that. It's now owned by like Cedar Fair or Cedar Point.
Sure.
And they're not treating it the same. But I go to Walt Disney World and I come back, I go to Worlds of Fun. I'm like, wow, this park kind of stinks compared to a Disney park.
It's a problem.
It's a problem. And it feels like this park kind of got shifted to the side because most of their money is in their, you know, Knott's Berry Farm parks on the coasts. And then you have this where, you know, they are trying to expand. They're now open for Christmas, and they have a winter fest, which I haven't been to yet.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
you know, the park, it's something about the mentality at this park is just not the same. We even had, I guess it's been a week now, there was a massive fight with a bunch of teenagers broke out and a bunch of kids got hauled out and are banned from the park.
Yeah.
It's like there's something missing in some of these other parks that, like, I wish, you know, wish these people who ran this park would visit a Disney park and say, this is what it should be like. Now come back and fix it.
On the other hand, what does it cost to go to Worlds of Fun?
You know, I don't know. It's, well, I know it doesn't cost me $20 to park anymore.
Cheap, but, you know, it can't be as expensive as a Disney park.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely not as expensive. But it's still, it used to be so much better. And I'm like, even for what it is, if they kept up the theming, it could be a much better park than it is.
Well, it's a corporate mentality. I'm not here to knock them, but it's a corporate mentality. I suspect there are more thrill rides than there used to be.
Well, let's see. We lost a couple of them. They have replaced some of them because we used to have the Orient Express, which was a looper when I was a kid. That one's no longer there, but instead we've got one called the Patriot, which is one of those ones that you kind of hang from the track,
which
is fun. My wife won't get on it for the life of her, but I like it.
No.
And we lost the Zambezi Zinger, which was this was an old roller coaster that, you know, had no seat belts or anything. You did just hold on to the Zambezi Zinger. We had that forever until they couldn't maintain it. So now they've replaced it with this like super fast wooden roller coaster. That, oh my gosh, my wife rode it once and she'll never get on it again because it is so fast. Yeah. I dug it.
Right. We have one like that back here at Six Flags Great Adventure in New Jersey.
Yeah, I need to go to more Six Flags parks because I kind of like them. I haven't been to one in a long time, but there's one in St. Louis that was fun.
Yeah, the emphasis is on thrill rides.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Disney and Universal, they're... Well, Universal certainly has thrill rides, but it's also heavily themed, and the emphasis is there.
Yeah, I think it's possible to strike a good balance.
I live in New York City. I like to get lost. I find reality boring.
Yeah.
I'll pay to escape it.
Yeah. And that's the thing, striking that perfect balance with theming is, you know, having some story mixed with the thrills. It's like the ultimate park. If you can find a good balance.
Well, and when you can find the theming, like walking into Pandora at Disney World or walking into Diagon Alley in Universal, you know, absolutely, all the better.
Yeah, and even just with story elements, I mean, it doesn't have to be a super fast moving ride to be thrilling.
I prefer it's not as I get older.
I mean, Space Mountain creates the illusion of speed, you know?
Yes. There's Dramamine or a barf bag.
Well, it's a good replacement for a chiropractor for me, so.
Yeah.
It clears the sinuses, so to speak.
Yeah. Which I could actually use right now. I did laundry today. I went to a laundromat, and it's just – I'm just all – so if my voice sounds weird, it's because I'm still half clogged up from laundry detergent up my nose, I think.
You didn't swallow a detergent pod by any chance.
Oh, no. I'm too old for that one.
Okay. Just checking.
Sometimes I act like I've swallowed something weird, but –
not to worry.
It's a strange age.
Was there anything that you found through your research that just really stood out or just shocked you or surprised you?
Yeah, there was a dead body in a spook house in Long Beach, California that nobody knew about.
Oh, yeah, I think I'd heard about that.
Yeah, he had been sort of overly embalmed in his time. He was a I got his full biography because I was curious. This guy was a jerk. He would plan to rob a bank and, you know, arrange it with his posse, only they showed up at the wrong bank.
Oh, no.
or they would blow up the bank, and everything exploded except the vault.
Oh,
so finally, he was gunned down and embalmed, and some con man showed up at the funeral parlor, claimed to be a relative, and said, you know, I want, give me my relative. And he kidnapped the corpse and put it on display, sent it around to carnivals and fairs, charged money for it, and somehow it got sold to this wax museum, and then somehow it ended up at the Pike in Long Beach, and it was painted with fluorescent light, and a TV show, I think it was $6 Million Man, was shooting inside the ride, and one of the crew backed into, you know, what they thought was a papier-mâché skeleton. It was this guy, you know, but an arm fell off, and they saw bone. Then they dropped his pants and said, oh, my God, it was a human body.
Oh, my gosh.
So that's how that was discovered. They finally brought his remains back to, I think it was Oklahoma, and buried him and then covered his grave in cement. Mm. But that was a favorite story. I'd always heard about it, and I wanted to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
So I hopefully have the factual version in the book.
That beats hearing about people who try to dump their relatives' ashes somewhere in the haunted mansion.
Well, I always want mine on the Matterhorn. But we can't discuss that. And I don't mean in Switzerland.
Yeah, put an urn somewhere in that basketball court. Yeah.
No, just a few little ashes in the splashdown will suffice. I have a friend anointed with this duty. She intends to carry it out.
If you're really careful, you might get away with it.
Talking about it on in public will help speed things along. But
it was even this year. I remember reading a story where somebody had actually tried to sneak their friend's ashes into the Walt Disney World and was trying to spread it around there. And said, "But this is what his fondest wish." And apparently, though, these were also a crowd of people. When I was watching this video, these are people who go and they'll sneak into rides that are closed and film video. Smart. Apparently this is a thing now on YouTube where people go, and that's why some of these people got suspected of stealing the animatronic out of Cranium Command.
At the Wonders of Life Pavilion.
Because there's people who have been breaking into that one in the night or whatever. And, you know, they wanted to go and spread the ashes of one of these people who snuck in. They wanted to, during the day, try to sneak into the place and drop the ashes. And somebody finally caught them at it. But like, I mean, yeah, I love parks. But yeah, there's stuff you probably shouldn't do.
No, there's behavior. Didn't their mothers teach them manners? Well,
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully, someone will say they find
it. And there were terrible crimes and murders at these parks and prostitution and there's a very dark side that I explore in the book as well.
Ooh,
it's not all fun and games.
Yeah, I'm sure Chicago has a lot of stories.
Oh yeah, Al Capone got his start in Coney Island.
Really?
A bouncer, he was a bouncer in a bar there. and he got his nickname Scarface. He was 18. He got fresh with this woman, female customer, whose brother took out a knife. Didn't like the way he was talking to his sister.
Mm.
And Al Capone moved on. I don't know about the guy with the knife.
Depends upon if Al had that baseball bat or not.
They didn't mess with these guys. And, and during Prohibition, the amusement parks were sort of fronts for speakeasies because, under the guise of good, clean fun. Also, so many of them were at the pier, were at various piers that you would get on a launch and go out 3 miles and you could drink and gamble.
Wow.
So they were
one side of the street. Here's the penny arcade.
So besides the roller coasters in the 1920s, you had speakeasies.
Wow. So what did you happen to find out? Like what park had the most deaths on an attraction or a ride?
Well, no, because not all records weren't always kept. But there was a place in New Jersey that had a terrible record for accidents. The name is escaping me at this.
It's an adventure park. Closed.
Yeah, it's something like that.
Yeah, it's an adventure. You know, take your life in your own hands.
Yeah, once somebody died on a ride, they sort of look into it. There was a certain roller coaster that was designed by Henry Traver that was in Crystal Beach in Buffalo, and Coney Island and Palisades. Fort George in New York, Manhattan had its own amusement park, the very northern tip. And it had it was called the Rough Rider. And the curves were just too dangerous.
Mm-hmm. And that's a rough ride, all right.
Coney Island, and that sort of introduced the notion the laws weren't passed, but the notion that there should be safety checks.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that's fun, though, about like amusement parks and theme parks is if you stop and think about it, a lot of those classic rides are coming up with new and better ways to go around in circles.
Yes, of course. No, better designs, mm-hmm. you know, smoother apparatus. But, yeah, there were even, they had scenic mountains. I always thought the Matterhorn was the first in Disneyland in 1959, was the first roller coaster inside a mountain. No, they had scenic railways, they called them. Mm-hmm. And they did learn to pick up speed. And the guy who invented the roller coaster in America, LaMarcus Thompson, whose first roller coaster went 6 miles an hour at Coney Island in 1884, he devised the scenic railways, which you would go in tunnels, and he even hired designers from Broadway shows to create these tableaus. Huh. And you would, you'd slow down and see them, and special lights would go on them, and then you'd, zip down a dark hill and continue, go on to another tableau. It was a real adventure.
Wow.
So there's nothing new under the sun.
Right.
But we perfected it. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the Pirate of the Caribbean in Shanghai is an improvement over the spectacular 1968 or 66 Pirates of the Caribbean in Disneyland.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was 68.
68,
late 60s.
Well, we know.
And that was a game changer. I mean, that really was so spectacular. Yeah. And Walt Disney died just before
Well, we know they got that date wrong in Jurassic Park, talking about it opening in 1956.
I'm a wordsmith. I'm really bad with numbers, and it's not improving. I have a hard time negotiating the tip on a restaurant check. But
well, now there's an app for that.
Yes. I know. There's an app for everything. Yep. There's not an app to remind me when the roller coaster came in. But I remember it was 1884.
Maybe there should be.
That sticks.
Technology definitely has been changing the game with theme parks and amusement parks. As now there's so much you can test the physics on a roller coaster. You could kind of build a computer recreation before you even start building a physical model of a roller coaster.
An Imagineer told me, that they had actual gauges with computers to test the drop in Tower of Terror.
Oh, wow.
And he admitted it was slightly stronger than they intended it to be. And then executives came in and said, leave it stronger. So, listen, but it passed.
Well, you're going faster than the speed of gravity when you go down. It's an amazing feeling.
Mm-hmm. That's the one where I rode it. I made sure that seatbelt was on tight as I could stand it.
I always have to sit on the aisle, on the edge. I can't be in the middle for that. I need to be in the front, preferably in the front row, right where you sit down, so there's no one right next to me.
Hmm.
Just in case something comes up.
Yeah, I guess that's why my wife, whenever I get her down there, she's bound and determined to not ride it because, going faster than gravity going down, you're going to come up out of that seat a little bit, and she hates any ride like that. She does not want to feel anything coming out of her seat. And so I'm like, if you strap yourself in right, that shouldn't happen, because I don't remember coming out of my seat at all, but I did feel my hair kind of leaving.
Right. I had a friend go with me to Cedar Point when I was researching that part of the book, and he's brave. He went on every ride, the roller coaster, and finally he got off. And I said, you should see your hair. You really look like you stuck your finger in an electric socket.
Yeah, when you go into an amusement park, don't worry about what your hair looks like. Just go for it.
Or what you look like.
Right.
I got news for you, though. When I was a kid, in the dark ages, Disneyland, women wore hats and gloves, mm-hmm. and men wore suits and ties.
Yeah. Which would be really funny now, because now they want to take a picture at that moment when you're on a big drop, so your hair and everything is all flying, and that's when they snap that picture. So,
well, and it's amazing that you've got groups now that go out and have these dapper days at Disneyland, Disney World. They dress up like that.
Yeah, what fun!
Yeah,
where do they get the clothes?
You know,
I think some people make it.
Some people make them. Some people go to vintage stores. In fact, I know that the Disneyland Hotel, they open up their convention center during these events, and they have pop-up stores come and, you know, sell their vintage clothing or their homemade clothing to people to buy at these events. So,
so now you'd have the photo of you going downhill holding your hat onto your head.
Well, I see some, you know, women with parasols and lacy dresses.
It's amazing how detailed people get with these costumes and these.
People want a fully immersed experience.
Yeah, they do.
And dressing up is part of it.
Yep. Which I'm sure when Star Wars Galaxy's Edge starts to open, we're going to see some people dressing. There's going to be some immersion.
Yeah. Wow.
Definitely.
That's all I can say. I can't imagine what traffic is going to be like.
Yeah.
And, you know, I ride the New York City subways at rush hour. Oh. I think this will be worse.
Yeah, that can be a thrill ride in and of itself.
Yeah. I have my own thrill rides every day.
Yeah. Bill Cosby, I think, stole jokes on the New York subway. It's like, you can get a three-act show just riding the subway around.
Yeah. Well.
Well, it's about time. I figure we should wrap this up. So I want to remind everybody, the book is called The Amusement Park, for short.
Yes. 900 Years of Thrills and Spills and the Dreamers and Schemers Behind Them.
There you go. And when you go order it from Amazon, you have to make sure you type – oh, wait a minute. I didn't mention the Amazon. From that river somewhere. When you order
in
the
South
river,
America. com.
Make sure you type in that full title.
No. The Silverman Amusement Park will do it.
Okay.
And may I suggest, I mean, of course, it's up to everyone. And please buy my book. But I suggest the hardcover over the Kindle version, because with Kindle, the illustrations, which are terrific, don't line up with the text. Mm. So you'll be reading about Tivoli in Copenhagen, but you might be looking at a picture from another part of the book. Ooh. So it's a beautiful hardcover and according to the early reviews, a great read.
Yeah. Plus it's always just nice to have a hardcover. I always like a good hardcover book. It's just comforting. Yeah. That might be my age though too.
Well, may you have many more years and may you spend them at amusement park.
Exactly, which I need to get out to some
keeps you young.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's kind of a big theme around here.
Yes, I've noticed. I just spent an hour talking to you. And may I say, it was very amusing.
Well, thank you.
No,
and thanks so much for coming and telling us about the book. And I want to read this. This sounds fun.
Anytime. And like I told you before we even started this, this is my first interview for the book. So
yay!
Thank you for breaking the bottle of champagne against my head.
Oh, well, hopefully it didn't do much damage.
Nah.
See, that's why you can't remember numbers so well, because we hit you with a champagne bottle.
Right.
I should have used that when I was going to school, when I couldn't remember things in history class. Well, somebody hit me in the head and knocked all these dates right out of my head.
With a champagne bottle.
With a champagne bottle. I don't know how they got champagne into the school, ma'am.
Yeah, right.
Well, it is school, so.
Or sister would be even better.
Oh, goodness.
All right, guys. Take good care. And thank you.
And you as well. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Neverland Podcast.
We invite you back next week for more fun and adventure.
Until then, remember to keep a pixie in your pocket.
It's that young at heart, positive attitude that you can share with others.
And remember to visit our website at neverlandpodcast.com.
There you can find links to our news page, our shop,
our contact page, where you can easily send an email to podcast@neverlandpodcast.com.
You can also find our Neverlanders page, where you can find out how to become an official Lost Boy or Pixie, because girls are too clever to get lost.
become a real Neverlander.
Please feel free to leave us a voicemail at 816-226-6492.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at NeverlandPCast.
And like our Neverland Podcast fan page on Facebook.
We also have a group on Facebook for you to join.
We also appreciate your support to keep the Neverland Podcast up and running.
Visit patreon.com/neverlandpodcast to donate to keeping the pixie dust alive.
Copyright content featured on the Neverland Podcast is copyright of their respective creators and used under fair use license.
All original content is copyright of Blue Band Productions, and a very special thanks to Yeehaw Bob Jackson at yeehawbob.com for our new ending music.
God bless!
Yeah! Hello, everybody, this is Yeehaw Bob Jackson. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Neverland Podcast, it's true. Neverland Podcast, we love you. Yay!
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.